On Wednesday, October 9th, 2019, the Bozeman Business and Professional Women, the Bozeman Public Library, and the Bozeman Chapter of the League of Women Voters sponsored a forum featuring the ballot issues and candidates appearing on the ballot for this fall's Bozeman municipal election. The forum was held in the large community room at the Bozeman Public Library. There were three candidates for the open seat on the Bozeman City Commission, Mark Agee, Zachary Crum, and Michael Wallner, and two candidates for mayor, Cindy Andrus and Brian Lemires. In addition, there were speakers representing the supporting and opposing sides of the two measures that will be on the ballot this fall, one to change elections for some Gallatin County government positions to be nonpartisan, omitting any party designations from the ballot, and the other to approve a bond issue to fund a new law and justice center for the county. There was an issue with the audio at the start of this recording, and we were unable to capture the initial remarks by the moderator, Sally Mason, and the opening statement in favor of making a number of county elections nonpartisan, given by County Commissioner Joe Skinner. I will attempt to summarize Commissioner Skinner's statement. In summary, Commissioner Skinner stated that, in his experience, the work of these positions in the county government was essentially nonpartisan, and that it was desirable for voters to place more importance on the qualifications of the individual candidates than their party affiliations. He remarked that in his experience, the county commissioners did not rely on political affiliations to make choices in their execution of their duties, that he believed people elected to the other offices that would be affected conducted themselves similarly. He reiterated his support for the ballot issue. We now join at the start of the opposition view, presented by Emma Bodie of Forward Montana.
The voters are usually pretty informed about those bigger races, like President, Senate, and House. But when it comes to those down ballot races, people oftentimes aren't as informed and don't know which way to go. And so what we find is that when people aren't informed, they often don't vote. There's substantial roll-off in the elections for those nonpartisan races. We find that without those races, they just don't vote. Without those labels, they don't vote. And those who do vote are the people who are more educated. And we find that more educated people are usually a little bit higher socioeconomic status. So how does that impact who gets elected? Well, researchers have found significant differences between the people who get elected on partisan and nonpartisan ballots. When that party cue is removed from the ballot, voters rely on a wide variety of other clues. This includes race, ethnicity, familiarity, place, prestige, religion, and ballot location. This feeds into voters' racial and socioeconomic biases. It provides an even greater advantage to incumbents and benefits well-funded candidates that can afford widespread advertising. So how does this impact the people, the constituents? Well, we find that the research shows that partisan ballots help the minority party. And basically, if you don't have that letter next to your name, people who are not aware of that partisan affiliation maybe aren't as skewed by it. But you might be thinking that's a good thing if you are in the minority party, but I would argue that you should consider how nonpartisan ballots can produce city governments that are less responsive to concerns of the working class and the poor. Studies of race and ethnicity find that there's especially poor responsiveness of these governments to minority concerns. And additionally, when representatives don't follow through on their campaign promises, parties are told to hold them or parties are less accountable.
Thank you. Questions from you? And I would ask you make them as brief as you can. Yes?
Are there any cities in Montana that have put this into place to have nonpartisan elections in their communities?
Actually, I think most cities are nonpartisan. This is a county. All cities are nonpartisan. This is a county issue. This is like your county offices, like treasurer, auditor, those offices. And there's several counties in Montana that are nonpartisan now. Yeah. Boy, I'm glad you're here.
Good question.
Yeah, I know there's several. Some of them have been done illegally, but there are 10 that are nonpartisan, and Madison County is one of them.
Madison.
Yeah.
Yes.
Emma, you sounded like you stopped in the middle of thought, but you haven't been in now to finish.
Gosh, thanks. Well, I would just say that everything that I spoke about today was from an article that I found in 2008 written by Gerald Wright and published in the Political Research Quarterly, and that the experts in the field are pretty overwhelmingly clear that nonpartisan ballots make our political systems less representative, and they hurt the people who are already disadvantaged in society. Thank you. Yes, in the back.
The sense of prejudicial voting that you spoke of, mm-hmm. is it not prejudicial voting when you vote for a party rather than a person?
Yeah, I think that if you were to vote for a party, you have a basic sense of what that person's views may be and what kind of decisions they might make if there was a partisan component to it. And so there is a prejudice, but I would argue that there's basis for that prejudice and that people who belong to that party in general respond in certain ways to basic policies rather than race or ethnicity or socioeconomic status, which I think is more problematic bias to have.
Hey, can I respond to that? I don't know what the research says, but practically, it doesn't make sense to me that a treasurer, a clerk and recorder, or a sheriff is going to make any different decision whether he's Republican or Democrat. I don't think there's any socioeconomic disadvantage to that. Don, Scott, and I, it's impractical to me that we'd make decisions based on that sort of thing that's in her research. Maybe that's all over, but here in Gallatin County, I haven't seen that.
Okay. The gentleman back there. Yes.
I just want to make sure I understand. Based on the way the law works in Montana, you can run as a partisan candidate, right? It's just that the ballot itself is nonpartisan. Is that right?
Yeah, and I was going to get to that on my second page. You can actually run as a Democrat or Republican. You can solicit money from the party. You can, say that whatever you are. Still, they're just when you go to the ballot, there isn't an R or a D after your name.
Okay, back there. Yes.
Isn't there a danger that if with Fox News and CNN and all the stereotypes that go along with being one way to one side or all the way up to the other side? I mean, isn't there a danger that if it is partisan, that you get that all the boxes of that particular stereotype get checked, even though they may not apply to you? And then as a follow-up, more as a comment, as I've been out campaigning for mayor, this isn't a plug for me, but I have found, surprisingly, that people are asking me that right up front. Are you Democrat or Republican? Are you liberal or conservative? And they want to know. And I try. You can't just say, oh, it's nonpartisan, so don't worry about it. They want to know is what I found, though.
Should I respond first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, as for mayor, I would argue that that might actually impact some of the ways that you respond to different policy decisions, and that could be a valuable piece of information. What some research has found is that if people who are voting in nonpartisan races are informed of the person's partisanship, the candidate's partisanship, that they then realign who they vote for with that person. And so clearly that's a valuable piece of information for people, and they feel a need to correct or realign their choices based on that. So I think in some positions, there's not a lot of places where partisanship should be included in the day-to-day tasks of that person. But it does provide more information. And as a scientist, more information seems like a better idea to me.
If I was running for commissioner again and somebody asked me that question, I would tell them, yeah, I'm a Republican. I'm not ashamed of that. That's who I am. But I make no decisions based on the party.
Okay, we have time for a couple more quick ones. Sir.
You referenced a study that was 11 years old. Is there anything current, and is there anything that is applicable to this county or this state?
That's a great question. The field for research in this particular area is fairly dated, and 2008 is actually pretty current for this kind of research. There's research that goes back into like the 50s, and so be glad I didn't cite one of those. I would argue that 2008 isn't terribly outdated for Montana and for the nation. That is a number of years, and I'd love to see some more current research on it. But I don't think that impacts the validity of the research. I don't think there's any current research here in Montana, and I would love for someone to start studying that, because it'd be interesting to see how it might change here in our local climate.
I don't know what the research says. I just know practically, you know, what I've seen being commissioner.
Okay, one more question. I'm sorry it's so short. Back there, woman.
Isn't it the purpose of research like that to cut through the bias of perhaps somebody who, you know, is only looking at one county and as our county changes and more people move in, like individual experiences become more biased than perhaps research even from 2008 would show? Why do you think your experience is more relevant than like a more broader survey?
I didn't say my experience was more relevant. That's what I'm speaking from, is my experience. You know, as things change, you know, when I ran the first time 15 years ago, Republicans had a 4-point advantage in this county. I'd say now probably Democrats have a 5% advantage. So, you know, that doesn't matter to me. That's going to pendulum back and forth. I'm just saying, from my experience, we should be voting for people that can do the job.
Okay. Emma, do you want to start and do a minute closing?
Great. So today I talked to you about some of the research in the field, and I think it was pretty overwhelmingly clear that the majority of people who are researching this sort of stuff feel that nonpartisan ballots make our city and county elections or county governments less responsive to the needs of minorities and the poor. If you're concerned about discrimination in race or socioeconomic status, this is something that you may want to oppose. I feel that as an individual, I'm going to vote against it in my personal ballot choices.
This might surprise you, but it's my feeling that if you're voting for a local candidate like a treasurer, sheriff, clerk and recorder, and you're voting for them only on the basis of if they're a Democrat or Republican, I would rather have you not vote. I really would. I mean, that's how I am with the state judges. If I get down there and I don't know anything about them, I don't vote. And I think that's the way it should be. I've been a commissioner for 15 years, and I've worked with a lot of really good public officials, county public officials. And I think all the really good ones do not bring partisan politics into their office at all. And I don't think partisanship matters to them, and I don't think it should matter to the voters.
And we're going to talk now about the ballot initiative to fund the County Law and Justice Center, $59 million, and it's a 20-year bond. The owner of a house with a $200,000 assessment would pay $34.10 the first year. So, Don, do you want to speak in favor of it? Don Seifert.
I would. Actually, you know, I just realized I cannot speak in favor of it because I can only inform and educate. I cannot advocate. However, I will give you some good information to help you formulate your decisions. So Gallatin County purchased the Law and Justice Center in 1979 when the population of the county was 47,000 people total. Currently, we are at 112,000 people and still trying to get those same services out of that building. That building has got some severe structural problems. It is not built to code. As I say, it is a refurbished Catholic high school, and that building was not built to the same standards as the great cathedrals of Europe. It's failing both structurally. It's failing operationally. The need for this building is great. There's a lot of services that are provided in this building. And for example, and we'll cut right to the chase. We won't gloss this over. Because of this way that building is built, the way it functions, you will be sharing the hallway when you go over there potentially, with murderers walking in the hall going to court, with the victims, with the witnesses, with the jurors, with the general public, all commingling in the same hallway. The potential for something bad happening is very great. Yes, we do have security there that will take the weapons out, but we still have words and we still have fists. So that's quite bluntly a real problem. This is a building that is not being very respectful to the people that utilize it. A victim service person going because victim services is an emotional and very, I can't remember the word, but as people need to be visiting victim services, that's a secured area, and quite rightfully so. And that the woman who maybe has a partner, a family member assault case there has to be interviewed basically right at the door before she is admitted in. That interview takes place in a public corridor with potential of jurors and the public right in there listening into what this person is having one of the worst days of their life right there. It's not very respectful. The sheriff is in that building. The sheriff provides a very serious and important function to the county. This building, should a cataclysmic event happen, the floors will pancake one on top of the other, there will have to be somebody come and rescue the first responders to get them out. So, thank you.
Tom Burnett, speaking against.
We have time for a brief joke. A doctor gave a man 6 months to live. The man couldn't pay his bill, so the doctor gave him another 6 months. We begin with a quote from the economist Thomas Sowell. The first lesson of economics is scarcity. There's never enough of anything to fully satisfy all those who want it. In this case, there's never enough money to do all that a county would like to do. This new debt would cost payments of about $3.9 million a year. If spread evenly across approximately 100,000 county residents, that would come to 109 in new taxes per household every year for 20 years. Every dollar in new taxes is a dollar whose use can't then be determined by the earner of that dollar. Some might put their $109 toward tuition, textbooks, tools for a small business, or an improvement to their home. We may need the $3.9 million a year for something more urgent. Maybe more deputies, road equipment, increased contributions toward the public pension debt that is hiding in plain sight. Maybe the federal government will force us to upgrade a wastewater treatment plant at the cost of $40 million. Maybe the legislature or school district will raise taxes. We taxpayers have to choose from among the options. We can't have everything we'd like. That's Thomas Sowell's message. And if we taxpayers commit the $3.9 million a year to a replaced building, we won't have it for the other things that we might discover are more important as they come up. The current law and justice building has shortcomings, true, but that's not uncommon in government buildings. I've seen neighboring counties and regional cities. Some get by with worse accommodations. The things done in the Law and Justice Center are commendably the core essential purposes of government. They need proper funding and proper facilities. There's a time to replace government buildings. That time may not be now. And now to return to and finish the Thomas Sowell quote. The first lesson of economics is scarcity. There is never enough of anything to fully satisfy all those who want it. The first lesson of politics is to disregard the first lesson of economics.
Okay, questions? Yes, ma'am.
I would wonder what's more important to our community than law and justice, for one thing. And also, I just wonder about the question about, I understand that the county can't hire more judges until there's facilities for them. And so what would you say about the backlog in the courts and the inability to hire new judges until there's facilities?
Okay. Tom?
We did add on to the northwest corner an additional judges facility. And that's nice and very well equipped electronically. It's probably the nicest courtroom of the three. So that could be done again to accommodate a fourth and maybe a fifth judge as time in the near future at much lower cost.
Yes, we are deficient right now in about 2.6 judges, 2.4, somewhere in there. So we are deficient two judges with really nowhere to put them. We could put them in another modular building. That modular building that's out there now has got problems. It may look fine, but it does have some serious problems with that one as well. And it's important when we're talking about courts that we just don't dwell on the criminal side. Civil actions happen in there too. Those right now are being delayed 18 to 24 months because of the backlog of the judges in the courts. The criminal numbers go first because they're guaranteed a right to a speedy trial. So there are issues. The saying is justice delayed is justice denied, and I think it's important that we move these civil cases through the courtroom in an expedient manner.
Yes, sir.
Last year, the Bozeman voters, 60% of them, voted to fund the Bozeman Public Safety Center largely because of the inabilities of that facility to handle the heat. And many Bozeman voters believe that that has solved the issue. Talking to Bozeman voters here, what are the services that are still needed to be performed there, and why is it important that it happen in the current law and justice versus at Kmart or something like that?
Yes, and thank you for that question. There's really no duplication of services between this building and the building that the city of Bozeman is intending to construct. Down there are the municipal courts. That's basically any violation of a city ordinance, that type of thing. The county is responsible for the justice of the peace courts, and also is for furnishing a home for the state courts, the district courts. So it's a there's no duplication of services between the two facilities. The services that are there are victim services, the county attorney, youth probation, the sheriff's office, the county attorney, the JP courts, the district courts, and the clerk of district court as well. So there's important functions that happen in that building that supply and serve all of the residents of Gallatin County, including the incorporated districts and the unincorporated districts.
Another question? Yes.
I have a question. CC's growing, so we have more people. All these people pay taxes. Our housing prices are go up, so it's more revenue from taxes. Where does this car taxes go? If CC doesn't have anything.
I apologize. I don't understand the question. I understand that we all are aware that there are more requirements for infrastructure in the valley. I understand the housing is expensive, but the reality is these are mandated services. I say this building boils down to six words: with liberty and justice for all. This is where you receive justice, where your liberties are protected. And it's important that this building is a functional building to make that happen.
Another question? Yes, sir.
What fraction of the money for the Law and Justice Center would come from increase in taxes on existing residents versus the additional revenue from new construction? From new housing development.
Sure. We're required by law to put out that number of $34.10 a year. That number would most likely, nothing is for sure, the highest that it would be. As the county grows and in those tax dollars, those requirements to fund that bond are spread over more people with higher values, that dollar should go down as we go.
Another question? Yes.
So with the Bozeman Public Safety Center, the exit of all the city employees associated with all those police and court functions, if the building were structurally sound, would you have a solution with regard to space with all the city personnel vacating? Would your spatial needs be met?
No, that building right now is 60,000 square feet. The requirements through more than one study that we've had shows that just for the county functions, we need a 120,000 square feet, which is the designation of the new building. I've always said that from Montana, we are really good at shoehorning things in. And right now, we're trying to put a size 11 shoe, a foot into a size 8 shoe. And there is virtually no space, even when the city vacates.
Okay. Yes.
Just to follow up on that note, kind of saw the plans for the new building, and there was a lot of flex space and ability to grow into the space and change the use of it. So that 120,000, is that for today, or is that for what we expect the county to need in the future with the population growth that we've been having?
It was really important for us when we designed a building not to design a 15-year building with a 20-year bond. By our calculations, projected growth and everything else, this is a 30 to 35-year building before it needs to be added onto, and there's space to add onto it. It includes 5 district courtrooms, 4 of which will be built out. The 5th will remain just framed in until we do get a 5th district judge. Once we go to 5 district judges, there are room in that building to begin a rotation and a scheduling of the courtrooms and still provide all of the associated offices that require required for a judge.
Yes.
We talk mostly about construction costs for this building. Of course, the second price tag is operation and maintenance paid over the lifetime of the building, also paid by taxpayers. Have there been any efforts to make this, if it gets passed, is this building going to be energy and water efficient and, you know, efficient in multiple ways to reduce the taxpayer burden?
This will not be a LEEDS building. However, we've instructed the architects and engineers to add energy efficient in there that will pay back over the life of the bond. So it will be an energy efficient building. It will probably but not be LEEDS qualified.
Okay. Yes.
Hi. You talked about lots of different types of functions that the current building has. Is there any way to split those functions up into smaller buildings that may already exist that might give us some flexibility at the taxpayer level?
These are functions in that building that all interact on a daily basis and an hourly basis with each other. The county attorney's in there. They're in and out of the courtrooms all the time, as well as victim services to supply people that are in there, the jury rooms, the clerk of district court that supplies courts, the court reporters. All of those interact on a basis, and it's important that those facilities are right next to the detention center so that when we have in custodies coming over, we don't have to transport them across town, all of that type of thing. So it's really important that all of these stay together.
Okay, one more question. Yes.
I think it's our public servants need professional facilities. I think it's really important. I'm wondering, though, why a lot of the people working on the Capitol buildings from the county left, a lot of them supporting the old one. And second, by law in the county, if you have to pass a bond, you have to pass it by 60% if you have between 30% and 40% turnout. The last municipal election is 32%. So the fact is, you're probably not going to pass this by 60%. What is the county going to do when all this fails to get going on a plan to educate the public and get this done right? Because I think this was too little too late.
My phrase is, if not now, when? This is a problem that's not going to go away. Construction costs are escalating at 8% a year. So that means if we delay this by 3 years, the same building is going to cost 25% more. That's what I'm here to ask you all to do, is to vote. Get out and make that decision. We have if you're not familiar with that buildings, we have tours available, and I will take you on a personal tour through that building if that's what you want, because that building behind the scenes is not a pretty sight.
Okay. Tom, do you want to do a minute closing, and then Don will do a minute closing, and then we'll call up the candidates for the city commission and mayor.
24% of people think the government has its own money, and that's both parties. If the bond passes and the $3.9 million a year is collected from taxpayers, we'll see the fruits, a commodious new building. What we won't see are all the good things the $3.9 million a year would have done in the economy and for individuals and families. There are other uses for $3.9 million of our money a year, and they may take precedence over replacing the building. There's a time for building and replacing government buildings. That time may not be now.
Thank you. Thank you very much, all four of you, for participating.
Do I get my closing? Holy smoke. This is a tough audience, I'll tell you. First of all, thank you for having us. This is an important subject. It's an important issue for the citizens of Gallatin County. This is, like I say, liberty and justice for all. This is where your liberties are protected. This is where your rights are protected. It needs to be a respectful building that is handled with care, and so the folks that utilize that building are safe, they're secure, and they have as little worries as far as their safety and security as can be. So, my phrase is, if not now, when? This is a problem that is not going to go away.
Okay, thank you, everyone. And again,
that's it for the first segment of this forum on the ballot issues and candidates that will be on the ballot for the upcoming Bozeman municipal election. The forum was held on October 9th, 2019 at the Bozeman Public Library. We would like to thank our underwriter for this portion of our programming on KGVM, McCormick Financial Advisors, an independent financial advisor located in downtown Bozeman, building lasting relationships with clients who benefit from personal service custom to their retirement and legacy goals. Go outside and play. We got this. You can find them online at McCormickFinancialAdvisors.com. You can find us online at kgvm.org, and you can find us on your radio dial at 95.9 FM. We are KGVM Bozeman, and we'd like to get back to the next segment of this forum of ballot issues and candidates in the upcoming Bozeman municipal election. This next segment features questions from the organizers for each of the candidates for City Commission and Bozeman Mayor.
And now we're going to do the candidate forum. We have now two candidates for mayor and three candidates for one city commission seat. Michael Wallner, Zach Crum, Mark Eggie, and for mayor, Cindy Andrus and Brian Lemires.
Thank you very much. My name is Michael Wallner. I'm running for Bozeman City Commission. I would like to thank everybody for coming tonight. I've been in Bozeman for 13 years now. I came out here for my education at Montana State University. I also came out here as a student athlete. I love the outdoors just like everybody else here, which is what has kept me in Bozeman. Why am I running for City Commission? There's two reasons. One, I absolutely love Bozeman and I care deeply about our future success. Two, I love listening and learning from the citizens here in Bozeman. So my team and I have knocked on the doors of over 11,600 voters in Bozeman, and we did that from the end of July through the middle of September, and we're doing it all over again. Why is that? Because we can learn from citizens, we can learn about their successes as well as their struggles, and how we can make a difference in their lives. I volunteered in over a dozen community service positions here in Bozeman. I've worked for government agencies at the local, state, and federal level. I have a master's right here from MSU in public policy and administration. My PhD is from Boise State. That's also in public policy and administration. I have served in several senior leadership positions throughout my career. I've also had the privilege of serving in several mentor-protege relationships with senior leadership officials in Bozeman, the state of Montana, the city of Boise, as well as the state of Idaho. I have learned a lot from those people that have done this for 30 years, since I've only been involved for 13. And those have been great experiences. My wife, Erica Chenet, was born and raised here. Her parents own Chenet's Boots and Shoes. They've been incredibly involved in the community, as have we. And I love Bozeman. I'm excited to hear from each of you tonight, and I look forward to a wonderful forum. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, folks. Zach Crum, thanks so much for all of you for coming out. I'm here today with less of a statement and more of a plea for our city. I'm actually Jewish, so I came over. Today's Yom Kippur. It's the holiest day of the year in Judaism. And Yom Kippur is a day of reckoning, where you try to reconcile and stitch together a community. And so today I have an opportunity for all of us to do just that. You see, there are a lot of people hurting in our town. I'm talking about the ones who have to skip prescriptions because they make too much for assistance in Medicaid, but they can't afford anything else. I'm talking about the people who can't get ahead because it takes 2 years to get childcare in this town, where 70% of people can't get it. I'm talking about those who can't wait the 35 years it now takes to save for a down payment in Bozeman, who are weeks away from homelessness. That's almost half of us, by the way. The ones who don't much hear in places like this because they aren't really represented in the city. They aren't really represented in the opinion pages of the Chronicle, and there probably aren't many of them here tonight. The thing is, that's most of our town, and for those of you who really are blessed, they need your help. So I'm running to be the kind of person that you can trust, and that they can trust to do the right thing for our city, for all of us. That's why tonight I'm pledging total transparency and accountability. Everything I intend to do and propose with the city will be available for comment, feedback, and sharing from the get-go while I'm developing it. If I realize that something won't work or needs change, I'll admit that and change it. And finally, my family and I are committed to making the sacrifice necessary to make this my full-time job, because everyone should have a voice in our city. So I need your help, for me and for all of them who are struggling, for my two-year-old, for the families here that deserve a future because their heart and soul is in the city. We need your help, and I want you to help me make this a town that we can all be proud of for a long time. Thanks.
Thank you. Mark?
Thank you. My name is Mark Eggy. I use he and him pronouns. Thank you all for being here this evening and for your interest in Bozeman's future. I grew up next door in Wyoming, out in the county. I never lived on a paved road until I came here to Bozeman, where I enrolled in school in 2004. And when I graduated, I couldn't find a good job here, so I moved to Phoenix, where I took a job at a fast-growing medical clinic. By the age of 25, I was the chief operations officer of that clinic. The clinic had grown from 75 to 150. And so I learned fast how to manage a large team. I had over 100 in my reporting structure, and I learned how to deliver high quality in a fast-growing environment. I left the clinic and started a business of my own, which I operated for 3 years. Along the way, I learned how to create jobs and the stress of needing to make payroll at the end of the pay period. I sold the business and enrolled in grad school at Carnegie Mellon University, where I earned a degree in data analytics and what was at the time the top-ranked analytics program in the nation. I got to do my capstone with the city of Pittsburgh and their public works department. Now, I currently work as a consultant for a transportation planning firm, where I help agencies like the Nebraska Department of Transportation plan for how they will meet their future mobility needs in a fast-changing world with autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles and micro-mobility. Here in Bozeman, I'm a member of the City Planning Board, where I'm already hard at work building a sustainable and affordable community for our future. I'm also on the City Parking Commission and involved with GPLT. Aside from my professional experience, I think what sets me apart is this. I think of myself as a consensus builder, and that's a process of identifying where we share things in common and where we may differ in our desires, and facilitating a conversation about where it is that we need to compromise in order to achieve the things that we value most. In the process of going out and having community conversations, I've learned a lot from you all over the past few months, and I'm excited to share tonight some of that vision about how we can move forward.
Well, good evening. My name is Cindy Andrus. It's really nice to see a lot of familiar faces in the group, and also some new faces. I'm pleased to be here this evening, and I'm here to ask for your support in another term to run as the mayor of Bozeman. I want to talk about three things. I'm doing this work because I'm passionate about it. At the end of December, I'll have been on the City Commission for 10 years. I've served 8 of those as a City Commissioner and 2 of them as the mayor. This work is not glamorous. It's not about money. You certainly couldn't put a child through college on the wage that we get. But it's really about wanting to make Bozeman a better place. That's why I've done it for the last 10 years, and that's really why I want to continue to do it. There are some things that I want to continue to work on. I think experience is something that's really important in this work. I have served, as I mentioned, 2 years as a mayor. I've been on 3 governor-appointed boards. I sit on 3 national boards. Why is this important? Because I believe that experience is about understanding issues, it's about understanding process, and it's about building relationships. And I bring all of that experience and knowledge and relationship building to this position. I also have a collaborative leadership style. Being mayor is not a solo journey. It's a team effort. It's a team of city commissioners, it's a team of staff, and it's all of you. And so we need to continue to work in areas where we need to build some collaboration, specifically with the county. We need more work there. We need to work with MSU. We need to work with the school board and various other partners, especially as we continue to grow. I'm willing to listen to new ideas. I always have been. I'm willing to collaborate, and I'm certainly willing to make tough decisions when necessary, and I've had to do that over the last 8 years. So I'm asking for your support. Thank you.
Brian?
Thanks, Cindy. I'm Brian Lemires, and this is not about Cindy. I like Cindy. I'm not running because I think there's necessarily anything wrong with her. you may remember me from last time. I ran and didn't do so well, but so here I am again. Just for background, I was born and raised in Billings. I've lived in Montana all my life. I've been in Bozeman for over 32 years. I came to school here at MSU and ended up staying. Got a job with the city of Bozeman 23 and a half years ago. I'm still there. I'm working in the finance department. I feel like I have a pretty comprehensive knowledge of all the inner workings of the city, not just the finance department, but all the planning, building inspection, fire, police, all public safety, et cetera, et cetera. While I never have been on the commission before, I do feel that I have experience in that I have with board membership and board leadership with regard to the Community Affordable Housing Advisory Board, on which I was a member for over 17 years, and I was voted chair year after year. There were a lot of contentious issues that came before us there, and I just felt it was my job to make sure that all the diverse membership of the board got adequately represented and that public comment was valued as it should be. If you look on my website, lemires.com, you'll see that I'm talking about power to the people and let's put you back in charge. Same thing as last time. After last time, I said to myself, I'm never going to run again, or I'll never do that again. But since then, some things got me riled up. A lot of it, and I list the issues on the website, but one of them was the way I think we need more transparency and accountability in our budget process. I think it's getting too loose there. We need to tighten it up. With regard with relationships with Gallup County and the school district and et cetera, I watch every city commission meeting and have done so for well over 5 years, and I just think we can do a much better job of treating people than we currently are. Thank you.
Okay. The question that we asked them to answer, all five of them, is what specific methods do you support for making housing accessible for low and middle income working people? And who would like to go first? Two minutes.
2 minutes. I'll take that one.
Okay.
This is my favorite thing to talk about, almost. So I don't just want to make housing accessible. I want to make it a basic right. We treat parking like a basic right in our town. We demand it. We know that we need it. We expect the government to provide it. And I think it's kind of sad that we have more priority spaces for cars than for people here. And that needs to change, right? And ideally, we should do both. So to me, when I look at the market, I see that it's failing, and I think that we can fix that. That's why I support safe, high-quality public housing, like is done everywhere else around the world and works, where costs are cut, prices stay low, and no one loses their home because they get a raise. That's why I support taxes on vacant homes and out-of-state properties, so that those can go to people who live and work here instead of those who don't. It's why I support mandatory rental inspection so that our safety laws are enforced, which they essentially aren't now. It's why I support opening a public bank, which would be able to refinance mortgages at, say, 1% or 2% in exchange for moving homes into land trusts where they can begin to be more permanently affordable for future generations. And it's why I think we need to set maximum lot sizes so that we can reduce sprawl, pass protections for mobile home residents to avoid displacement, and stop making exceptions for luxury apartment developments that only drive up prices further. Finally, I think that we need to prioritize real transitional housing for the homeless. You might have seen that the warming center just had to open because of the winter storm. I think that's a shame. And I think it's time that we never, ever have that conversation again. And instead, we build permanent transitional housing so that we never have to talk about that in an emergency storm. And also, by the way, so our city, county, and hospital can save millions of dollars in social services over the years.
Michael asked to be next.
Yes.
Thank you. We have a serious affordable housing problem in Bozeman. It's going to take a combination of incentives, funding, regulatory relief, and community partnerships for us to be successful with this problem. A perfect example right now is the old bus barn. The school district's looking at getting rid of that. The city of Bozeman could pay the taxes on the land. Maybe the school district could give them the land. Maybe we could work with a private partner like Billings Clinic. They're coming to town. They might be able to pitch in on more affordable or workforce housing. But some specific proposals that I have. One, we need more new high-density apartments here in town. That's very affordable housing. Two, we need to continue working with partnerships on down payment assistance for local people here in Bozeman. Three, we need community partnerships, and I'm calling on Montana State University to assist the most. They're bringing in a record number of students, which is great for our community and Bobcat Nation, but at the same time, it's creating an affordable housing supply and demand issue. Four, we need to continue to support HRDC. They do wonderful things in our community. Next, I think we need to upzone. So Seattle and Minneapolis have been really successful with upzoning, where you take a R1 home and turn it into a R2 or R3 home essentially overnight. And lastly, we need to take a serious look at our planning office. Marty Madsen and Chris Saunders are doing an excellent job with the resources they have. We need to hire more people, we need to pay them more, and of course we need to process more permits. I just knocked on somebody's door the other night, Jen and Steve. They're a couple working here in town. Their apartment costs $1,700 a month. They make $100,000 a year. They have two young kids, and they can't make ends meet. They are thinking about moving out of Bozeman because they can't make it here in our town. It's time to change that and keep our middle class here. Thank you.
We have an affordability crisis in this town. That's not news to any of you. It threatens the fabric of our community. I have many friends and colleagues here who are one rent hike away from getting priced out of town. And every weekend, I'm knocking the doors of seniors who tell me that their property tax bills are starting to cut into their grocery budgets. If left unabated, this trend will hollow our community from the inside out, displacing all the carpenters and ski patrollers and law enforcement officers and teachers from this community. Why do we have an affordability crisis? Well, it's simple. It's hard to build anything in this town, and we've made it so. Not only that, but we've set the rules in such a way that it skews things in favor of building expensive housing rather than modest housing. So what can we do about this? Well, first, we need to operate our planning department as a high-functioning business. Currently, we're operating as a bureaucracy, and we should remove that barrier. Best case scenario, it takes 8 weeks to get the same building permit that they issue in Belgrade in 3 to 5 business days. I believe we can do a high quality review in 4 weeks and get a good result. I spoke with a home builder recently who says that it takes him 30 weeks to build in Bozeman, the same home that he built in Belgrade in 21 weeks. And as a result, this year he chose to build more homes in Belgrade than in Bozeman because of difficulties with our planning department. Second, we should liberalize rules for building accessory dwelling units. Bozeman's recent ADU revisions left most of those barriers in place. Off-street parking requirements, on-site ownership requirements. Vancouver, British Columbia, 35% of single-family residences have one or more ADUs. We could start building those in Bozeman, and that would go a long ways towards helping catch up on the supply that we need to address affordable housing needs.
As I was out on the campaign trail, I found that the housing situation in this town seems to be a tale of two cities. We've got those who are saying, hey, I've lived here for a long time, and taxes are going up, so it's no longer affordable for me to keep living here, so please don't tax me out of my home. And then we've got other people who are saying, hey, I want to be able to live in the town where I work. And It's definitely going to be a challenge to try to meet the needs of both of those groups, but I think we can do it if we do several things, and one of them is we need to do a better job at the city of leading by example. If we're going to define affordable housing as being a crisis, and if in our strategic plan we're going to say that we want large employers to develop workforce housing programs for their employees, then we need to take a look at ourselves, and I need to be careful about not talking about things that aren't public information, but I can talk about this because Mayor Carson Taylor brought it up. And if the city, there's affordable housing allowances given out to employees, yes, consistent with the strategic plan, I guess you might argue, but they're given to the highest earners in the organization, okay? And so in addition to that, there's, and I got caught off on my earlier, I didn't, not very good time management there, but through reorganizations that had me frustrated and was the reason that I ran the first time, we, you now see what Commissioner Krause alluded to as the manager of the manager of the man. Boy, that goes fast. And so what I'd like to see is shifting those affordable housing allowances around to the people who really need a housing allowance, getting rid of some layers of management so that down at the where the housing is it needs to be constructed, down to the planning department and the building inspectors, shift more of that pay down to them so we can keep some better keep the employees around instead of getting lost to other jobs, and build more housing, because in a large part it's not just an affordable housing problem, it's a housing problem.
Right.
Done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy?
Well, as you know, we do have an affordable housing issue in our community. We have done an affordable housing assessment, and now we are doing an affordable housing action plan. So we have assessed the housing across the whole continuum. Where are the gaps? What do we need? Now we have an action plan, and we will be having some public meetings about that action plan. But in looking at affordable housing over the years, there are two things that I think I would support as the question was asked. One of them is to continue supporting the LIHTC, or the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program. And I think that's important because we have seen great results in that program. We have the Larkspur building that was used low-income tax housing credits for that building, and we have another one in the pipeline, the GDM project, that is coming on with 100 units for seniors and 140 units of affordable units as well, and they are rental units. That's what I like about low-income tax housing credits, is that primarily they're used as rental credits, and that is a gap in our housing continuum, and I think that this is something that can really help fill that gap. It also, for those of you that may not know, it's a federal program that creates incentives to finance rental housing and households for those below 60% of the area median income. The other thing that I think is really important, and it's been alluded to already tonight, is this idea of partnerships, specifically as it comes to land costs. Partnerships with our other community members, MSU, the hospital, the city, the county. I think there's a lot of work that can be done there, and I think there's some areas where we can all come together, look at what we have, look at the property that we have. That is the biggest barrier to housing, is the cost of land. So if we're able to come together and figure out how we can use some of the property, some of the land that we have for affordable housing, for community housing, I think that those are two areas that we can really make some headway in. Thank you.
Okay, now I have three rapid-fire questions for these guys. And I'm going to start with you, Mark. What's your favorite season?
Fall, when we get one.
Zach?
Spring, for that reason.
Mike?
Summer's in Bozeman.
Cindy?
Fall.
Brian?
Summer.
Summer? Name your last cultural event in Bozeman that you attended. I'm going to start with you, Zach.
Well, today, services all day. I actually haven't eaten yet in about 36 hours. I'm pretty hungry, but that's part of the deal. Yeah.
Okay. Michael?
I would say knocking on doors over the last 2 months.
Okay.
It's been quite the cultural event. I've learned a lot.
Brian?
Well, I know I've done something since then, but Sweet Pea, I guess. Sweet Pea Festival.
Okay.
I hope I've done something since then.
Cindy? I know you have a few other things you're doing.
Well, in Bozeman, it would be around art, the art walk, or the tin works exhibit that was there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was at an underground music festival here in Bozeman a few weeks ago.
Yes, okay. Thank you. And then the last question is, who would you most want to have dinner with, alive or dead? We're going to start with Brian. I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but guess what? You're on the spot.
John Lennon.
Nice.
Amelia Earhart.
Oh.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Oh, man. I don't know either right now. Sorry, I can't narrow it down.
Okay. Michael?
Abraham Lincoln. He was a key figure at unifying the country, and I think we're at another time where we need unification in the United States.
Okay.
I changed my answer. I want to have dinner with Donald Trump. It won't be boring.
It what?
It won't be boring.
No, it won't be boring.
And if I may, I'd love to have dinner with Brent Totterian, who's a brilliant urbanist who is the former city planner of Vancouver.
Okay.